Hey everyone, it's time to kick off another exciting session of our DevOps Office Hours. It's July 5th, 2023. I'm Eric Osterman, and I'll be your host. I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. Cloud Posse helps teams conquer AWS using our rock-solid Terraform blueprints. Whether you're starting from scratch or just not satisfied with your current setup, book a session with me by going to cloudposse.com/quiz, answer a few quick questions, and we'll have a call to show you how your team will succeed. For those of you the call, the format's very informal. My goal is to get your questions answered. If you're curious about Cloud Posse or any of our open source tools and modules, this is a great place to ask. For those of us joining through the podcast or YouTube channel, we host these calls every week, so don't miss out. You can register for these live and interactive sessions by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office hours. Our call today is recorded. We'll post a recording of this session to our YouTube channel. So if you want to support and like what we do over here, please hit those like and subscribe buttons. It helps us out a great deal. Head over to youtube.com/cloudposse. Again, youtube.com/cloudposse. All right, let's get into a few minor announcements. I think because of the holidays happening here in the US, it's been a pretty quiet industry news week for us. Here are a few things that have come up. One that I'm really excited about was in our Slack channel. Lauren, I believe, shared this link. I hadn't heard about the project before. Guys, don't hold out for me when you come across cool things like this. So I forget when it was. It was probably a couple months ago at this point, but I was curious about just-in-time access approval systems, specifically for AWS. And there is one. It's open source. It's been around for a little while. And it's called, I don't know, I don't think it's actually called Common Fate, even though that's the repo name. There's another name for the project, I thought. But you can see, if you watch the video, it's pretty cool. It allows users to request elevated access and specify some amount of time. Here you can see in the video kind of, so, you know, how soon do you need it or when do you need it? How long do you need it? Why do you need it? It'll show you who the approvers are. You submit that and there'll be, the approvers have a admin screen here and they can see who's requesting access to systems. And it's also integrated with Slack, so you can get notifications there. You see here in the gray, slightly in the shadow here, that you can also approve those requests directly within Slack, presumably taking you to the Common Fate web UI to approve that access grant. This is really nice, so that by default, nobody has access to anything with such a severe elevated access and requires kind of like a two-man rule. So somebody else to approve a request to elevate access to, you know, administrator, for example, in your identity account or in your root account. A related announcement is, if you haven't noticed, GitHub supports MP4s now embedded within your readmes, which is really nice, especially for you know, open source projects to kind of communicate what they do. So they're doing a good job of using a embedded MP4 within their readme here. Has anyone seen this project or seen similar ones?
Yes, I've... I joined their Slack channel and they are quite active and got contacted with one of their community manager and quite active.
Very cool. So are you going to be deploying this or have you already done that?
No, I'm just interested in all kinds of projects.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, yeah, let's see. It's got 136 stars so far. Looks like the project is relatively young, initial commit last year.
I tried it out and I like it, except for the fact that it's CloudFormation, which I don't like. so I went looking for alternatives and I found one that is Terraform based. I put a link in the chat, but I ended up not going with it, even though it's really good, just because we don't have the budget for it. So we ended up going with a solution that came from AWS actually. At Reinforce. I posted a link to that in the chat as well.
I mean, how tethered is the solution to CloudFormation, though?
Just like the deployment aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Does it use CloudFormation also to manipulate the changes, I guess, to, you know, to grant access, you're saying?
No, I don't think so. I think they call like AWS APIs.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's cool. Another one, I stumbled across it just, you know, this weekend by coincidence and saw an update here that they merged support in BuildKit for using cache manifests from ECR. This is, of course, to speed up your Docker builds when you're doing CI on AWS. Really helpful if you are using GitHub Actions, for example, with self-hosted runners. Unfortunately, it wasn't going to be available until 0.12. This was back in May. This was announced. Similarly, I saw that, I guess I didn't link to it here. The RC1 of 0.12 was just dropped in the past week. So I think that means it's pretty imminent. Here's the build kit releases. So RC1 dropped, where is that? Last week sometime here. Let's see if it makes mention of ECR. And it does not make mention of this ECR thing. So maybe there's it goes under a different name.
It's the first thing is deep OCI. So ECR wanted to be very upstream and work with the OCI for how they do caching. And there was a whole thing.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up. All right. Good news. Next one, I think I saw it in weekly TF newsletter, TFR. It is, I don't know, it's not entirely accurate to call it what I'm about to call it, JQ for TFRs, in the sense that it allows you to manipulate your TFRs through a CLI interface with some command line arguments. And also supports you to do things like exporting your vars instead as environment variables. If you are kind of curious how to manage TFRs at scale, honestly, this tool is still not it. And the right tool for managing Terraform variables at scale is Atmos, and it's pretty much the only tool out there with a coherent effort to manage large scale systems for Terraform. And last one was something Vlad just shared with us. If you are a Dependabot user and have been annoyed with dozens and dozens of independent pull requests chewing up your your build minutes, that can now be reduced. Dependabot can consolidate multiple updates in a single pull request now, as announced in this changelog, grouped version updates for Dependabot public beta. Any other announcements for the week? That's all I got. All right, let's go into Q&A. Let's see, anything in the office hours, Slack chat? We had one question, but they are not going to be joining us on the call today. Young Chol Kim, I think, asks, I am not sure if I can join the meeting, but a question I have is, what is the recommended way to remove the existing stacks where in the setting of the Atmos to generate the variables in the backend for each Terraform workspace and with Atlantis configuration repo perfect config? I don't fully follow exactly the question. I get the gist of what you're trying to do, I think, which is to, how do you decommission a project versus adding or changing a project? It'd be easier to answer if you join, and we can get this answered for you next week if you want to join, or post in the Atmos channel. Hans asks a question for this office hours. Using the new Terraform import functionality to move existing infrastructure into the Atmos style stacks. So yeah, I think that the new import functionality is pretty cool. I think that the new import functionality largely meets a use case of simplifying GitOps for Terraform imports, so that you can define inline in your code the resource IDs that you want to import into the current context and state, and not have to do that locally. We have not had a chance to experiment with the functionality yet, and I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, Hans. So did you have something in mind in particular?
Not quite. As you might be aware, I'm quite new to this, to the whole Atmos and Cloud Posse environment. Yeah. But I'm looking at existing infra, how we can reuse that, make sure that it's moving towards this kind of thing. So I was looking a little bit around, okay, how do you transition old infra to Atmos style and perhaps this new infra? Terraform 1.5 can help with that.
So on the one side, I'm excited about the functionality. On the other, I'm not really impacted by the we're not really that impacted by the functionality, and it's really important, you know, to kind of explain why. So in almost 100% of our engagements, Cloud Posse does greenfield build outs. And then a migration of legacy workloads over to the greenfield build-out. And therefore, this concept of importing existing infrastructure into the Terraform state is not a pattern we ascribe to. Therefore, trying to improve infrastructure in place is a very difficult and costly endeavor. And that's why when we're brought in, it's usually to start from scratch.
It's not for the whole infrastructure, but bits and pieces that you want to keep. For example, also, if you look at the GitHub environments, I didn't see any much GitHub-focused Terraform modules yet, but like bringing the whole organization, repository, membership, etc.
I see what you're saying. Well, though, in that case, you can just migrate the actual Terraform state itself. Because those you're not trying to do it inside of an existing component. You're just moving a wholesale component over. So whatever root modules you are using today to manage your GitHub organization, let me bring an example up on my screen.
Certainly, that's using the ClickOps module.
Hold on, I did not follow. Hold on. So let's say you have a Terraform root module that you use to manage GitHub organizations. You would copy that root module into your components directory.
Uh-huh.
You would take whatever configuration you use for that. And if it is sufficiently parameterized, then what I would do is put that into a stack configuration. So if we go over into stacks and something like the catalog. Now, if there's a baseline for every repository that you provision, then you do something similar to what we do for S3, So here are the defaults when we provision an S3 bucket. You would have something similar to this with the defaults for a well-defined GitHub repository. So mandatory branch protections, definition of the default branch, required code owners and things like that would be like feature flags that you would enable here.
Yep.
And then in your actual, so that's the pattern. This is an archetype. So this is an archetype of a well-defined S3 bucket. And then when you go use that bucket somewhere, just trying to think here. So org, CPLI, platform, production. So this gets interesting where does a GitHub repository relate to your AWS organization, or is it really a totally separate cloud? And I'd argue that it doesn't even relate to your AWS organization, that it's a totally separate cloud that you're managing and you might want to put it somewhere else. But anyways, if I go into here and look at US East 2, here you can see now we import some catalog entries. This is a catalog entry for an S3 access log bucket and another one for a CloudFront log bucket. So if you were doing this for GitHub repositories, you would probably import the catalog entry for a well-defined GitHub repository. And then you would define one instantiation for every single repository here. That's our way of doing it. And that means that the state of this repository is different from the state of this repository. Now, keep in mind, this has nothing to do with GitHub. I'm just using these as placeholder text to try and not be as hand-wavy in conversing here. The thing is, that might not be how your Terraform component is architected. And I'd have to really know how your Terraform component is architected to advise on how best to structure your variables.
Yeah, as it's already posted in the chat for this Zoom, it's what I call the ClickOps module. So basically there is no Terraform code there yet.
Oh, okay. I heard you say something with that. I didn't connect the dots. Okay. Well, it is also something that we will be releasing relatively soon as a component for managing GitHub repos. I know Jeremy White on the team has been doing something like that on a project that he himself is working on. So that'll follow this pattern.
Yeah. So I was more curious in general, how do you do imports with Atmos? I understand from Cloud Posse side that you do the engagement with Greenfields.
Yeah.
If I look at the Atmos tooling, I was wondering, okay, how does that work properly?
Yeah. So keep in mind that the new import functionality is just raw or just pure HCL. So it's no different from our perspective than anything else you're doing with Terraform and HCL. If we were talking about the legacy import command, in Terraform, the key thing is that the Atmos Terraform command supports every Terraform subcommand. It just passes it straight through. So however you would do a Terraform import on the command line is how we would do that. Now, there are other things like TF import. GitHub repo. Oh no, I think it was. This guy. I think this guy. He also has a tool for importing. I thought. Long and short of it, we don't support it. I've been kind of paying attention to what other people do for it. And I thought that he had one, but I might just be thinking of TF migrate instead of imports.
Okay. I'll just have a look at that as well.
Yeah. But
I'm currently just messing about to see what is available, what's possible, what are the various limits also to my own brain.
Yeah, keep in mind that Atmos is really just a workflow tool to implement certain patterns. And in this case, related to importing of resources, we haven't done anything custom in Atmos to improve the Terraform import experience. So whatever you do in vanilla Terraform is the extent of Atmos support for importing of resources.
Yep.
All right, let's see in the channel. All right, so Chris King asks, I guess this was last week. I don't know if we answered it or not. Is Chris on the call today? He is not on the call. He asks, hi, I'm Chris. I'm an individual who's new to DevOps. In other words, not a prospective client at the moment, just a new engineer. I came across your modules on the Terraform registry and was curious about what you consider a professional workflow for Terraform deployments. The ultimate goal seems to be semi-automated code review and automated test deployments within an isolated account and network. But getting to that last step takes a ton of effort. And what do you think is the sweet spot? Yeah, so I'll just answer high level since Chris isn't on the call. But the gist of it is our convention is to treat every stage as a separate AWS account. So if you have a production stage, a dev stage, a sandbox stage, a dev stage, et cetera, each one of those represents different AWS accounts. Now, the question is, how do you promote those changes between environments? And actually, this does sound reminiscent. I think I might have answered one of these questions recently. But the thing that we do is we test any change you make. We test that change across every deployed environment at the pull request phase. That way you understand the impact of your change before merging it into main across all of your environments, because your environments aren't operating, you know, totally, they're operating totally independent of each other, but you need it to work across all environments. And the only way to know that is by testing it in all environments. Now, in terms of applying it, the ideal workflow is correct. You apply it first, you know, in a dev stage or a dev account, then you apply it in a staging account, then you apply it in a production account. And we are doing this in our GitHub actions for Terraform. We do it also with Spacelift. In Spacelift, it's the concept of confirming a release. So you first confirm your deployments in dev, then you confirm the deployment in staging, then you confirm the deployment in production. Obviously, if it doesn't work in dev, then you don't proceed forward. Anyways, that's the gist of it. Anyone have something they want to add, their workflow? All right. Any other questions we can get to today? Let's see, there's some chat in the Zoom I haven't looked at yet. All right, Isaac shared a couple alternatives for the just-in-time AWS privilege escalation. Joe Perez says, I feel not having an appetite for CloudFormation reminds me of Datadog's log forward or Terraform instructions, which just uses Terraform resource to deploy CloudFormation stack. Yeah, it's a hack. Yeah, Hans mentions Q as a good for doing VAR management. Hans, you would get along well with Andre on our team. Andre is one of our core maintainers of Atmos. Andre has been itching for an excuse to introduce QLang into Atmos. I just find it a little bit esoteric to add right now, but yeah,
It's quite good to do the fendering stuff. Then you reduce the craft to only a few lines, and you can generate all the components YAML that you need. So yeah, that's quite cool.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know enough about Qt to provide a good defense or or the other. There's been a lot of things that we've done though within Atmos. Are you also familiar with it, with Atmos import syntax, so that you can very dryly re-import the same component over and over again? So stacks are similar to function calls almost now. So if I go to, let's see here, documentation, core concepts, stacks, imports. So, you know, since you've been playing around with Atmos, you're familiar with just how you can import configs like this, and that's straightforward. But one of the nice things we added was this idea to add a context. So when you do the import, so this lets you then have basically flavors, if you wanted to have a blue cluster and you wanted to have a green cluster, you can import the same exact configuration and you can pass it a context with any variables you want here. In this case, we're calling it the flavor, blue or green. And that would give you a pretty dry way of importing multiple times. Anyways, I'm sure Qlang does something like this much more dryly. We were going for this idea that, you know, YAML is very well understood and not yet another language to pick it up.
At the moment, I use Qt to generate the YAML for me.
Oh, you are using Qt to generate the YAML for you? Interesting. That's cool. You're using it to generate stack configs for you?
Yeah, currently working out some bits and bobs, but yeah, basically doing that.
Okay. I'll let Andre know. You guys, if you message Andre in the Atmos channel, I'm sure he'd be very curious and excited to hear what you're doing with that.
Yeah. Like I said, I need to work out some bobs, but working out pretty well so far.
Yeah. All right. Joe Perez says he's doing a POC or recently did a POC for Spacelift. Pretty good stuff. Joe, anything you want to share from your POC?
Yeah, I think one of the main takeaways was allowing developers to stay where they're comfortable, and that being like GitHub. So it was cool to see how well it integrated with GitHub to the point where developers can check in on Spacelift if they want, or they could just completely rely on GitHub alone, which is pretty cool. The other thing that I really liked was their way of handling permissions and a remote execution. So I guess I haven't looked into Terraform Cloud that deeply, but it was really cool. Like what I'm guessing the experience is, or how they do it is, they upload your Terraform code to Spacelift and then provision a runner, run the Terraform code, and then output that log back to you. So the end user doesn't necessarily have to have write access to whatever AWS or any other provider that you're using. So it's a really cool way to kind of help along that kind of security aspect of testing what a plan may be before getting to checking in the code, and then helping that process along once it does get to GitHub or whatever VCS that you're using.
Yeah, that is a cool feature of Spacelift. To be fair, Terraform Cloud pioneered that feature that is supported in Terraform Cloud, remote runs. I'm not 100% sure that's what they call them, but the remote runs. And yeah, it kind of eliminates some of that need to have AWS permissions altogether. Alex, Siegman, have you guys played with that anymore in a POC? Is that working out? He might not be able to unmute today. All right. Yeah, it's something we've been curious about leveraging more of. We haven't been leveraging the remote runs yet in Spacelift. Mark Tamsky posts that they have created a Spacelift stack called Stackception that walks the GitHub tree for all directories that contain a TerraGrunt HCL file and creates new stacks for each one. That sounds really cool, Mark. My main concern is kind of like, in a smaller organization, I could totally see that working. Do you have any controls over like what permissions or like what repositories are allowed to do that? That's always been my concern with that model.
It's a single repository. And then contexts are attached via a separate contextification stack. So the permissions granted to the stacks are basically zero.
Mm-hmm. And so it creates the stack, but it can't do anything in AWS.
Until you get the context attached to it.
And then is that a GitOps process or is that a manual process?
It's also a GitOps process. And it's also in Spacelift.
What does that workflow look like from a developer perspective? Like, what are the steps?
Generally, the DevOps team does the contextification, granting the permissions to the stacks. So, I mean, I don't know how often do folks have new services standing up that need this sort of treatment? Because it seems to be like a infrequent. We launch services infrequently.
Okay. We see some customers doing several new environments every day, every business working day, pretty much.
I see.
But that's cool though. I kind of like the idea how you did that. It reminds me of, I forget what the plugin was in Jenkins that would auto discover repositories and set them up if they saw a Jenkins file.
Yeah. And then I think we even use chained stack deployments, runners. So like you can have one Spacelift stack trigger another upon completion.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Yep. Joe Perez says, the workspace dependencies of Spacelift was pretty cool too. The Spacelift team seemed like they were really on deploying new features while they were doing the POC. Yeah. The product has pretty fast velocity and they're pretty quick at fixing issues as well.
I think I fixed my mic, but yeah, we use remote runs for letting our developers be able to write Terraform against existing stuff. If they don't want to wait for like the commit and wait for the PR and the stack to run, they can just queue it up locally. It saves them a few steps and it works pretty well. So can't complain.
Yeah, I imagine that gets a little bit faster to iterate on rather than committing and pushing and letting CI do it every time.
Yeah, the downside is, and I don't think we solved this yet with remote runs, is at least with the Cloud Posse structure we're using today, that won't work for net new Terraform work. Because there's no stack for it to remote run against.
Yeah, you need Stackception for that.
Yeah.
To quote Mark Tamsky. Yeah, that is the sore spot in Spacelift is the cold start problem. How to do things until you have a stack deployed already, which usually requires first one merge to configure that stack so it's in CI. And then another commit to make your changes. So it will run your changes as part of CI. I assume no one has solved that problem. All right, sounds like it.
let me get back to you on that.
All right. Yeah, I just want to make sure I'm not crazy because I'd like to see it solved. It is one of the nice things that we're seeing solved by having GitHub Action workflows in place of a system like Spacelift or Terraform Cloud. It allows us to not have that problem. All right. That takes us to the end of questions. Any other questions we can get answered today? Announcements, cool projects. Can even be philosophical questions, architectural questions.
If you make it that wide. Polyatmos community on GitHub. How is that organized besides the whole Cloud Posse being involved from their assignments? What is the other things besides doing some simple questions, simple pull requests? What is the governance of that project?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll be honest, you know, we're still a small company and it is largely vendor led by Cloud Posse. We get, infrequent pull requests to Atmos here and there. There is no like governance body outside of like Cloud Posse internally.
Okay, yeah, I can understand that it's Cloud Posse mainly led, but I can understand that some people are more involved also from external people or how some decision making is going.
Yeah, I would love to encourage more active participation. It seems that there hasn't been enough, initiative on that side to do it. There's usually a tipping point, just like with the community. Our Slack community, I started it back in like 2016, I think. Communities, they take a while to grow and take off, and there's a very special element to them. So I think it'll be a little bit before, a self-sustaining movement comes behind the tool. Right now, I would say the movement is more across the collection of tools that we have and not one in particular.
Okay, makes sense.
I think one thing that might change things or accelerate things is if we open up more of our reference architecture, the configuration itself, rather than the very simple quick start, but doing like a more full-featured reference architecture that was public, I think we would maybe see some greater movement. And that is something we are talking about internally.
Yeah, it would at least make sense if the links that you provide in that open source repo are publicly accessible. And I can imagine that you provide some links, hey, this is behind the paywall from us.
So they should be actually. You pointed out some things in a GitHub issue recently that I was mistaken on. So actually, I think we fixed those this morning. So I thank you for that. But all of that documentation is 100% accessible here. There might be links to the reference architecture, and that's when you see a login screen like this. We are considering opening up parts of this, but it has not yet been fully decided which way to go.
Yeah, or at least for those links that are in the repo, perhaps make a little bit clearer those are restricted access. For example, map references to the cold start, and that one is also sealed off.
Gotcha. Yeah, that could be something that we do. It's a balance between polluting kind of it for the paying customers versus the general open source.
Just a small icon behind the link that marks, okay, this is Cloud Posse special, something like that would already make sense. Right now it's like clicking, oh crap, don't have access yet. I hope that can be resolved pretty soon, besides you opening up, but that's a different discussion.
Yeah. All right, any other questions or feedback?
Well, I put in some GitHub issues, something also regarding the mixins that seems to be broken, or at least in the quick rev.
Yeah, I saw your issue on that. I didn't quite follow the concern based on this write-up. The quick start provides an example for the VPC component with a region mixin. When generating the vars from the region mixin are not included. Oh, I see now what you're saying. So you're saying this variable does not show up in the TFVars file?
Those do show up, but the VPC ones don't show up. Like the availability zones that you define in the region. Those US West 2A, 2B, 2C, those are not coming through. And that's more likely because here you reference on 216 to VPC.
Well, at least in what I see here, there's a typo, but there's a white space here, it looks like.
This one is coming through pretty okay. It's more about your sounds. They don't come through. And as soon as you change on line 216, VPC to VPC -1, mm-hmm. then they are showing up in the generated stack. And that's because likely they are component specific. Just a little bit lower on the old one, yeah. Just a little bit lower. That one, 344. So it seems to link on component ID and not on the actual component itself. But I'm not sure what is the actual principle behind it.
I'm not entirely sure what's happening. This will be resolved if you post it as well in the Slack channel. A good command to run is atmos describe stacks, and it will show you the entire inheritance chain and where variables came from and help debug the complex.
As soon as I make sure that the names are the same, either VPC1 or VPC in both, then it works out. But currently the one refers to VPC1 and the other to VPC, and there it doesn't work out. But I'm not sure.
I would need one of the engineers to answer that. I can't answer that. Yeah. When changing the VPC in the regions, mixing to VPC.
So that's 260.
I don't see you would never see usually VPC in a mixin, for example, or at least the way we use region, you wouldn't see VPC in the mixins.
Yeah. Well, it is in the example that I was running, so that's why I came across it.
Let's see here.
At least it was in the quick start for Atmos.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see here. I don't see this. I don't know where that example was, but anyways, let's figure it out in Slack and get to the bottom of it. Cool. Any other questions, Hans or anyone else? I see what you're saying here with this example. As this is written, it assumes a single VPC. The background here is two things going on. It's convention over configuration. So reducing the amount of overhead required to implement something. We support multiple VPCs in an account, but you would use a different pattern than what we are doing here for that.
Okay. So the example is a little bit wrong.
Yeah, so the example doesn't support what you're trying to do and would take a different approach. The reason, though, is overall, it simplifies things tremendously if you generally have a single VPC per account and instead symmetrically create multiple accounts when you need multiple VPCs, because then you have not only network level isolation, but IAM level isolation on those same resources. So for example, you know, if we needed to have a separate VPC for PHI, we would recommend creating a separate account with a separate VPC that has that, because you need not only network level constraints, you need IAM level constraints. And if you did that within the same account, it's possible, but now you have a Snowflake IAM architecture because you have a unique requirements in one account.
Yeah. Okay, well, if you just scroll down, here it's called VPC. If you scroll down and you see to the US West example, then it's called VPC1. So here it's basically running on two thoughts.
Name VPC1, inheriting from the defaults, but it's not going to get the defaults from that.
So basically what you're saying from this example, this should just be called VPC. On line 344, to have a single VPC in this environment.
I'll be honest. I'm not 100% up to speed on this example. That will be more the engineering team.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah. So I might be muddling things, but I think we do want a unique VPC key here. Assuming that they are all in the same stack.
Yep.
Sorry. Hope I didn't create more confusion.
No problem. I'll see the updates on the GitHub issue then to see how it's kept resolved. No problem.
But now, thanks for explaining what happened, and I can relate it. I already brought the issue up to the team this morning, and I'll. Yeah, we'll get to the bottom, see what if the example needs to be updated or there's documentation issues or something else.
Yeah, okay, that's cool.
Okay, we got 10 more minutes for our office hours today. Any other questions we can get answered? All right. Yeah, usually we'll have one or two engineers on the call. Unfortunately, due to the holidays, those regulars are not able to join today.
No problem.
But next week we'll have Matt Calhoun back, who's usually would be able to answer that question for you.
Yeah. You can select me the name of the engineer I should ping about the queue situation.
The Qlang?
Yep.
Yeah, I'll message you, Hans, with that.
Perfect.
Connect you guys. Cool. All right. Well, final call for questions. Otherwise, we'll move on to my outro. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. We'll be posting a recording of this session to the YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/cloudposse to subscribe and share those videos with your team. To connect with me on LinkedIn, go to linkedin.com/in/Osterman. Again, linkedin.com/in/Osterman. To register for our weekly office hours, it's at cloudposse.com/office hours. Just submit your email and you'll get an invitation with a link to join our live office hours. We have a weekly newsletter as well, syndicating all the links from our Slack community that are interesting. Go to newsletter.cloudposse.com to subscribe for that. Our Slack community, you'll hear us throughout the office hour sessions referring to various channels. Those can all be joined. It's a public community. Go to slack.cloudposse.com for that. And finally, if you're curious about working with Cloud Posse, go to cloudposse.com/quiz, answer a few quick questions, and you'll be able to book a meeting with me directly. And that's it. Have a great rest of your week, everyone, and talk to you next week. Same time, same place.
Talk to you.
Thanks.